Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
The eyes of the country, dare I say the eyes of the world, are maybe focused on the southern border, the United States of America, where we have a immigrant issue. I'm trying to play it down the middle, if you will. And one of the things that has come up are these detention facilities where youth, some separated from their parents, some who were presented themselves or were apprehended at the border unaccompanied, are being sheltered. Joining us right now on our KTAR Newsmaker line is Antar Davidson. And Antar himself worked at one of these facilities down in Tucson, Estrella del Norte, which is also run by Southwest Key. They have some 26 of these shelters for immigrant children around the country.
So thank you so much for joining us, Antar. Good morning to you.
Thank you, Bruce and Pam. It's an honor to be on and share my story with Arizona.
Yeah. Well, we want to hear your story. So you worked at this facility for a couple of months, and then you left. First, let's just start with taking us inside the facility. How many kids are there? How are they being treated? What did you see?
Inside the facility, there's between 280 and 300 kids. It's also staffed. There's a fair amount of staff. It's heavily understaffed, unfortunately, and there's a heavy burden placed on workers who are mostly making $15 an hour with no benefits. So it's a very disastrous combination of factors.
Antar, you and the other employees there, are there any specific backgrounds? Are these people with medical or therapy backgrounds? Who are the employees?
Well, it's a mixed bag. I mean, you do have a few here and there that were that have some sort of a background. However, they're in the same position as many people who are just happen to be, they're bilingual, but they have their experience. They're coming from construction jobs or from retail or restaurant jobs. So it's a mixed bag, but it's people, the majority are people that do not have the background and are basically doing the same job.
Okay. All right, so we're talking to Antar Davidson. He used to work at the Tucson shelter, Estrella del Norte, that is housing a lot of these children that are either coming across the border unaccompanied or whether they're being separated from their parents. Now, Antar is of Brazilian descent. He speaks Portuguese. And I want you to tell me about three Brazilian migrant children that arrived at the facility and what transpired with them, Antar?
Okay, well, that was probably the most visceral point in my decision-making process to ultimately leave Southwest Key. It was a group of three siblings, aged 16, a brother, 10, a sister, and 8, a younger brother, and they had been separated from their mother the night prior. At 2:30 in the morning, they left Texas, the facility they were in Texas, arrived at our facility at 9:30 in the morning. They were showered, they began their medical intake process. However, they were never given the opportunity to sleep in a bed. In the afternoon, I was told I had been translating for them, and then I was told to kind of supervise them in a classroom and show them movies. And they began asking me can they get a bed? They wanted to know if they could go to sleep. They hadn't slept all night. And to which I asked the shift leaders, they said no, that they couldn't do that. There wasn't the right supervision or whatever. And so I had to then sweep a place on the floor for these kids to sleep. And then later that night, when they were finally being put into rooms, the three siblings were put into three separate rooms, and they were being explained that in Spanish, which they don't speak. And so they understood that they would be separated again, now from each other, after having been separated from their mother, and they were clasping each other and crying. And so I was called over the radio to help translate, to tell them that they weren't allowed to hug. So they brought me over, and I came upon them, and I said, bro, in Portuguese, bro, you have to be strong at this point in time. Like, I know this is a difficult situation, but your brother and sister need you. And he looked at me and he was had tears streaming down his face, and he says, "How? How can I be strong? Like, look at my sister. Like, look at my brother. Where's my mom?" And then at that point, the shift leader came to me and very aggressively told me in Spanish, "Dicen que no pueden abrazar." Tell them that they can't hug. Tell them that they can't hug. And at that point, I told her, "I'm sorry. As a human being, I'm not going to do that." And pretty much that was the catalyst to me realizing that despite the good that I was doing in the facility as a capoeira teacher, an English teacher, and vocational teacher, I would be placed in situations where I would have to work against my morals. And so it was at that point that I resigned. I resigned a week. Yeah. A week after that.
We're speaking to Antar Davidson, and Antar is a former employee at one of these migrant shelters, specifically one down in Tucson. Again, the company Southwest Key operates some 26 of them across, I want to say it's four or five different states along the border. Now, and Antar, a horrible situation, and the way you describe it and the pain that those children felt, I'm not trying to discount it in any way, shape, or form. We saw last week that some journalists were allowed in one of the facilities in McAllen-Brownsville, and it was a larger one. I want to say it had nearly 1,500 kids in it. And while I can acknowledge they're being detained, I can acknowledge they're being held and they can't leave, it also didn't look like the worst place in the world. It looked like the staff was making every effort to take care of them. It was clean. It was relatively comfortable. Is there some balance in there? I mean, these kids are not being mistreated, are they?
Sure. Well, I would like to first present one opinion and then also add to it on the back end. This is obviously a very different situation because people are not being exterminated, but initially Hitler led press rounds in facilities and they said similar things. You have to realize this is a coordinated effort. They prepared for it. They invited them. And this is not, they're not seeing the data. You weren't, the media, when they were let in, weren't seeing the day to day.
Okay. They saw the best foot forward.
Oh, of course. And okay. The fact of the matter is this CEO, what he's doing is him and his wife clear almost $1.5 million in tax money. And that's not Trump's fault. I think that this is since the Obama years. The funding for this program began in 2007, and they were getting $27 million. And now they're getting $300 plus million a year. So what he's doing
big
is
business.
Protecting a very lucrative business. I also want to add that in regards to a lot of people are making this issue seem that perhaps I'm coming out and I don't believe in border security. Listen, I live in Tucson. I'm 60 miles from the border. I feel like I'm aware of border security more than people would, you know what I mean? I'm a stone's throw away. The fact of the matter is, if we don't figure out a way to absorb and integrate people, they criminalize. The more we're making enemies, it's a simple fact of social interaction. The less people you make enemies of, the more secure you are. What we're doing now is we're taking people who are for the most part vulnerable. People who are not vulnerable or not desperate don't try to make this. You know what I mean? They cop on a plane or they get a new job. This is not something that comfortable people are doing. If we make these people enemies, we're essentially sending them right into the hands of the people who were apparently protecting from. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to realize this is very much about border security. And what that comes back to is these kids who are extremely traumatized need more than just a clean bed and a warm meal. These are kids that are being pushed into public schools. These places are reunification centers.
So, Antar, I want to get to the kids aspect of it because there's a lot of politics involved, and I agree that we need to do something along the border. But back to the kids, because that's where you can give us a very unique perspective. And I want to know, in the couple of months that you worked there, do the kids entering this Tucson facility know what's going on?
No, that's the whole point, is that they basically, prior to this policy, you had the organization had been built around kind of a route, what was established as a migratory route of mostly kids from Guatemala. You had a fairly homogenous population who, for that reason, were more compliant. The kids that came from Guatemala had the laws had existed for the past 5 years, so they knew what to expect. They came. They were instructed before. Kids paid a guide, and the guide took them, and, you know, they were instructed they'll be in a facility for a while, then they'll get their papers and get reunified. So those kids, for that reason, they knew what was happening. But the kids that started coming since that policy, they had no idea. I didn't really, at the time that I was working, I was not necessarily plugged into the news cycle because it's an extremely stressful job. So if I wasn't at work for those 8 hours a day, outside of that, I was just trying to relax and prepare for the next day. I have shared my experience based mostly on the shift that I personally was involved with and saw in the shelter as this policy was rolled out.
Speaking of, okay, if you could just hang on, we want to talk about kind of what changed in there and get a little bit more into the conditions inside one of these detention facilities for children. I want to say ages 10 through 17 is the age bracket. Specifically, we're talking to Antar Davidson, who worked at the Southwest Key facility in Tucson, Estrella del Norte, where there were some nearly 300 kids being held there.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So on our KTR Newsmaker line right now is Antar Davidson. And Antar is a former employee of Southwest Key, which is a nonprofit that has the government contract to house migrant, immigrant youth, people picked up at the border, people attempting unaccompanied minors. Some of these kids have been separated from their parents. Obviously, the story everyone's talking about. And Antar, thank you so much for sharing your stories. I mentioned the age, and I want to say that was from the one in Brownsville, the Southwest Key, the facility there with some 1,500 kids aged 10 to 17. What was the age group of the children that you were working with at the Tucson facility? What is the age group?
We had kids from age four and five, all the way up to 17 officially. However, there was the occasional adult that would slip by. Mm-hmm. The children's detention facilities are much nicer than the adults. So, and also documents are easier to falsify in the countries of origin. So some people will pose as children, and they've caught people as old as 26 in facilities like this.
Oh, wow.
Oh, well,
people that have lied or have forged documents and claim they're younger than they are. But all the way down to age four, because my guess is a four-year-old needs much different care, supervision, or attention than a 16-year-old.
Particularly a traumatized one.
So who's been separated from their parents,
Well, it's part of a triple threat of trauma. These kids are traumatized from where they're from. That's why they're leaving. They're traumatized on their journey. We all have heard stories of what happens on this journey. And then they're traumatized now at the border, and then traumatized even a fourth time at the facility, right? Because when you have a four-year-old or you have a five-year-old or a six-year-old, or any child for the most part, if they are with their parents going through a dangerous situation, they get to a place and then they're taken from their parents and not told where they are for weeks. Which kid can imagine? Which kid could go through that? People are listening who are parents. Your kid probably might be scared of the dark.
Right.
The kids are scared of the dark. Now, so when you think about the effects, right, think about your kid if you don't get the nightlight on. Now think about your kid if you had crossed through countries, developing countries, and then came to a border and were arrested, put in jail, potentially, and your child now going through a reunification process. But who are they reunifying with?
Well,
they came with their parents. They didn't come necessarily as part of the reunification group.
And I want to talk to you a little bit about that. And we're up against about a two-minute deadline here, Antar.
Sure.
But my question is, while you were at this Tucson shelter where these children are being housed, how many instances did you see of children actually getting unified with their parents? And what kind of process was that like?
It happened fairly regularly. I could look through my prior emails, but you could feel it. There was a turn and a churning of students leaving and coming, not minors. And so there are caseworkers that work extremely diligently. I have to give credit where credit is due, for Southwest Key. And there are the ones that are there. They're really working hard to under very difficult conditions. Mm-hmm. They're working hard to do these reunifications. However, if they're doing this because of that fact, it's of the utmost importance that these facilities adjust to these traumas for that reason specifically, because these kids, their ultimate destination are United States public schools.
Got it.
Wow.
Well, I don't even, there's so much floating through my head right now, and I'm so thankful, Antar, that you could join us again. Antar Davidson, who worked inside one of these shelter facilities, specifically the one down in Tucson, nearly 300 kids, you heard them, age 4 up to 17, but sometimes adults sneaking in, lying about their age to be kept in these. We talk about the inside the facilities. One of the things floating around today is that some of them have chain link fences inside. They look like cages. I just mean aesthetically, physically. What did the inside of this facility look like? Can you compare it to something I could understand?
It's not necessarily that yet. Here in Tucson, it's a converted student housing apartment, a student housing apartment complex.
Okay.
It's close to the U of A. However, after the runaways that occurred at the end of May, they installed these large net mesh fences that you can actually see from the street. Where they doubled the height of the fences. So they're starting to lock down more and change routes and cut off entryways. And so it's for all the ambiguity they give on whether or not the kids can leave, there's quite visible signs of, doubling down on this prison-like environment.
Antar, thank you so very much for your time. We sincerely appreciate you sharing your story, what it's like inside one of these facilities. Antar Davidson, a former employee of Southwest Key and specifically the Estrella del Norte immigrant detention facility.
What a unique perspective.
I can't even imagine.
Somebody who has been there helping out kids. And, I mean, think about it this way.
For the right
way.
Reason.
But think about it this way. How many people listening right now have been to therapy? And they've been to therapy because of some trauma that happened to them when they were children. What's going to happen to these children, given the amount of trauma they've been through? What is that going to set them up for in life later on down the line?
And you asked the question earlier. Is this what we expect our government to do? Is this America? Is this what we call it? Genetic testing sites are becoming the new social networks, but be careful of what you go looking for with some of these DNA tests. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So there have been a proliferation of these genetic testing sites. You like spit in a tube, or I don't know, you give them a piece of your hair. I don't even want to know where it comes from. But you send it away, and back comes a genetic
pie chart,
basically, of everything from your proclivities to your ancestry, a variety of things. But it's also leading to some other things, Pamela.
Yeah, I find this fascinating. When we're talking about, sites like 23andMe
Ancestry.com,
all of that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to get this pie chart breakdown as to where your ancestors lived, right? Where are you from kind of thing. But you can also get a list of the people who had the test done and were genetically related to you.
Right.
Right. So there's this story of Dylan. And she was given a 23andMe genetic test kit for her birthday. A little intrigued. She spit in the tube, sent it off, and she got back a 41-page list of all the other people that were tested that are genetically related to her. 1,200 people in all.
That's a little overwhelming.
She said she started to go down this genealogical rabbit hole.
Yeah, okay? I was going to say, this is worse than just playing on YouTube
videos. What I didn't
videos.
Know, because I've never done this before, but the website has internal messaging.
Yeah.
It's also supplemented with, you can use Facebook. She was able to connect with 3 second cousins who were in her neighboring town. They had breakfast. They had some dinner. They're now besties. People are finding family members they never knew existed. And sometimes, though, I don't think the family wants to be found.
Well, I was going to say, the assumption is that everybody wants to be reconnected with everyone they're genetically related to. I think that assumption is the mother of all you-know-whats. I would not make that assumption. Can I tell you, I don't know what it says about me. I haven't thought about this as deeply, Pamela. I have zero interest in participating in one of these things.
I'm intrigued by it, but I would never do it.
No.
I'm intrigued. I understand the fascination with it. That doesn't mean I'd ever go down that rabbit hole, though.
I want to know if I'm adopted. I don't want to know I don't want to know.
Okay, but you bring
ignorance
up the adoption.
Ignorance is bliss.
You bring up the adoption part of it, though, because there have been a lot of adoptees who are now bonding with their biological family members that they've been searching for their entire lives, that they were able to find. This is kind of like the new social networking platform. This is what, like, Facebook first started as, where you were, you know, you were getting in touch with these
out-of-town
friends.
Your old high school playmates.
Family members found one another, but this is on a whole nother level.
This reminds me of, and I have a friend that adopted and went looking for, and using one of these sites, managed to find the adopted family. The biological mother and then the biological father, and found out all the siblings that they had. And I say that, and you might say, oh, that's like heartwarming.
Yeah.
This story's not over yet, because I'm going to put it nicely. I think I know why she was put up for adoption. And her newfound biological family sound challenging at best, might be a nice way to put it.
Got it.
I'm looking at it going, are you really better off having found them? Because I cannot imagine the emotion, how difficult it might be for some people to put a child up for adoption.
Sure. Oh my gosh.
Going on at that time, right? There's a reason why you were put up for adoption. Do you always want to go back and be able to connect and find out?
Some people do.
I realize some people can't sleep at night not knowing.
Absolutely. You want, yeah. I mean, and again.
But rarely is it a positive, happy story.
Sometimes it is. I have heard of positive, happy
stories.
But
the reason you were put up for adoption, you know.
Yeah, no, that's not usually
you see
all
what I'm
that
saying?
Positive. But things change. People change. Lives change.
Fair.
Experiences happen in life. But I also found it was fascinating that with this woman, Dylan, who got the 41-page list of like 1,200 people that she was genetically related to, after she kind of filtered through it all, Bruce, she wrote to 25 people that were related to her.
Okay.
She heard back from only 9. And she's like, you know, I guess a lot of people aren't doing this to get connected with family.
No.
No, they're trying to figure out, like, you know, am I really Italian?
You know,
am I really Polish? Or you know, kind of find
what
a little bit more.
Yeah,
like that kind of thing.
But I'm not interested in, like, having to buy a whole bunch of new Christmas gifts.
No.
That's not what I'm getting into this for.
No, you can choose when you do these types of services whether or not your information is shared with others.
Right.
So if you just wanted to know your heritage and your ancestries, you can do that. But wow.
I'm half German and half Texan, and that's all I need to know.
You've told that joke a couple times now, haven't you? Because it just rolled right off your tongue.
You say it like
tongue.
It's a joke. Again, my dad, when I asked him what my heritage was, and he told me you're 50% German and 50% Texan, I didn't know he was joking until I said it out loud to a teacher and had her laugh in my face.
Like I just did.
And so I just rolled with it. Just stick with it. Work so far. Did you go out to the movies this weekend when it's hot outside, or when it's rainy outside? Maybe over the weekend you decided movie theater was a good place to go. Apparently most of you went and saw Incredibles 2 and probably enjoyed it, and none of you went and saw Gotti, and you're probably better off for it. We'll tell you the tale of two movies coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Pamela, that's the theme music from The Incredibles. You wouldn't know that. You didn't get a chance to see it with Baby Riley this weekend.
Next weekend. We're too busy this weekend, but it's on the schedule for this weekend.
Super big movie. Yeah. Keep in mind that Incredibles 2 set a record. Now, I always have to preface it by saying it set a record for a specific reason. It is the 7th largest opening in history, and it was the largest animated opening ever, opening weekend, beating a Finding Dory. Now, the reason also is, keep in mind, tickets cost more than they did. It's not that more people
poo-poo it, right?
It's not that more people saw the movie. It's that it's more expensive to go see movies, and they do it by dollars.
Do they keep track of ticket sales? Not dollar figures, but
actual numbers are different, right? Yeah.
Why don't we get those?
It doesn't sound as good to go, this is the 290th biggest opening ever.
Oh, come on. It's not that low.
It probably wouldn't be in the top 50.
You don't think so?
No. Okay. Not when you're looking at, when you take away tickets sold versus dollars.
Yeah.
I mean, 20 years ago, tickets were $4, you know? I mean, now it's 12 bucks. You figure it out. So anyway, the point is, it's still a huge movie, and I gave it 4.5 stars last week.
Yep.
It's a solid movie. I think most people that went and saw Incredibles 2 enjoyed it. I say most people because are you epileptic? Do you suffer from epilepsy? If so, I'm very sorry to hear that. But should you have received a warning?
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie, so you're going to have to.
I see movies, so you don't have to.
But this is what I want to see.
Oh, okay.
But, okay, so what I'm reading here, and I'm not giving anything away here, folks.
No spoiler alert?
No. But there is a scene that is pretty fast-paced, and it's got a lot of flashing lights. Fair?
Yes.
Okay. Now, after the film opened on Friday, if you go on social media, you would see a lot of people talking about this, saying, I can't believe Disney didn't tell people about this specific scene because it could trigger people with epilepsy.
Many people have taken to Twitter to complain about why Disney didn't put up a warning to viewers before the start of the movie.
Okay, my question is this. How many people went to see Incredibles 2 unknowing this scene existed and fell into some sort of seizure?
Okay.
Are you concerned for a legitimate reason?
Were people negatively impacted? Were epileptics triggered? That's, I think, what they call
sure,
it with these likes.
Yeah.
By the scene in the film, or do you just want a warning label on everything?
My whole thing is, and believe me, I will take a different stance if I learn otherwise, but I haven't seen the data that shows people had seizure after seizure after seizure. I mean, you're talking about the amount of people that went to see this movie over the weekend because it was a blockbuster
huge
film,
yeah,
right?
$180 million.
And if I was doing my show prep and I saw in Texas there were 2 children, and then like in Pennsylvania there were 5 people, and in Florida there were 8, I'd be going, whoa, Disney. Man, you got to be careful about this stuff. Well, but people just kind of going on social media, or you need to complain about this. Like, come
you
on.
Say people, and I get back to, you know, I can find one Twitter user that said it. One woman on Twitter chastising Disney for not putting up a epilepsy seizure warning is not people.
Fair enough.
It's one person.
It but then
like
Disney,
people are saying, no, one person is saying.
But then Disney sent out an advisory to theaters.
Come on now.
Asking them to flag customers to the scene.
So anyway, so, you know, again, yes, the evil person, the bad guy in Incredibles 2 uses like strobe lights, flashing lights to disorient his victims. Okay, and he puts him in a trance. Again, no spoiler alert there. And because of that, some people are worried. Now, a movie that might have benefited from flashing lights.
Or a warning.
That put you in a trance. And
or an advisory.
And not an advisory that you might suffer an epileptic seizure, but just an advisory that you might literally be prepared to sit through
one
of the worst
movies
of all time.
You love this movie.
So, again, and Holmberg is nothing but crap about that. He was texting me all weekend, giving me grief. Gotti. I interviewed John Travolta and Kelly Preston, who are in the movie Gotti. Gotti opened, okay, give me a Incredibles 2, Pamela did $180 million. How much do you think Gotti did on its opening weekend? Incredibles 2, $180 million.
25?
Like 25 mil, yeah. BSI, yeah. How about 1.7 million? We're rounding up.
What?
Rotten Tomatoes is the reviewers,
yeah, yeah,
the scores. You get 0 to 100. Rotten Tomatoes is at 0. It has a 0 score. It doesn't have one positive review. It doesn't have one vaguely positive review.
So is like John Travolta the one buying out all these theaters just to get the 1.7 mil?
You say that. There literally is the company that is involved in distributing it. Roughly half of the movie sales came from the company distributing.
Here's tickets. Go see this. Wow. Which movie should I go see, Bruce?
How about this? Gotti may not be the worst movie of all time. Worst gangster movie of all time. How's that? Is that nice? Sorry. Yeah, go see Incredibles 2, please. Do yourself the favor. If not for you, for the loved ones in your life. Check out the headlines on the way and the latest on immigrant families being separated. Everyone is against it. And everyone thinks it's somebody else's fault. Where's the truth? We'll try to find it coming up next on Arizona's News Station.